So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, Man fans. Ollie Mann here with The Modern Man. Good episode this week. Sort of our first ever celebrity interview. As you know, we don't really do famous people on this show. I mean, I talk to people that have had amazing lives and incredible careers, and I guess some of them are a bit famous, but we've always steered clear of people that are just promoting something. Well, the guy I'm interviewing this week, Rory Reid, he is definitely promoting something. He is one of the presenters of the new series of Top Gear, which... if you've been buried in a cave on Mars for the last 6 months, you won't know is relaunching, this weekend. But I guess, you know, he's a sort of quasi-celebrity. He's about to be massively famous, but actually at the moment, if he walked past you in the street, you wouldn't recognise him. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about that in-between state. He knows he is on the cusp of becoming really, really famous around the world. What is that like? So we've known each other for ages, which I guess is why he said that he would do an interview with us. It's kind of an exclusive. He hasn't really been speaking to the press. He got a bit badly burned by some of the tabloids when he was announced in the presenting lineup, and I think that might be one reason why. We talk a bit about that in the interview as well. So, world exclusive interview with someone who's going to present one of the world's biggest TV shows coming up today. That's not bad, is it? Before we get going, though, I must say thank you to our beer money donors of the week: Joe, Carl, Rich, Gemma, Monique, Lindsay, Danny, Chad, Shingai, Gary, Peter, Hayden, James, Ben, and Simon. Ken in New York as well, who bought us 4 beers and has asked if he can become the New York ambassador to the show. The truth is, Ken, I'm beginning to slightly lose track. We're now 18 episodes into The Modern Man. I can't remember whether we've had an episode where I've said someone was a New York ambassador before, and I wouldn't want to award it twice. So yes, you can have it, but actually this is kind of a plea, really. If anyone out there who is listening to the back catalogue anyway just wants to transcribe who the ambassadors are that I've awarded so far and email them over to me, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you. Jade as well, currently living in Bangladesh, bought us some beers. She says, I'm unable to get magazines here in Bangladesh due to the lack of a functioning postal service, so your podcast is perfect. Thank you, Jade. You can be the ambassador for Bangladesh. I remember we don't have one of those. And also Tony has written to us, not to ask to be an ambassador, but to explain away the peculiar amount of beer money that he gave us. As you know, I suggest a monthly contribution of £3.31, the average price of a pint of beer in Britain, to support the show. But you can actually fill in on the web form whatever amount of money you would like to give to support the show. No one's ever written in to explain before, but he says, I better explain the weird amount of £6.54. I had one of those prepaid credit cards with some spare cash on it, so I thought donating to a podcast would be a good thing to do. It certainly is, Tony. He says it was you or Richard Herring, but he's off air at the moment. Tony, nothing makes me happier that I've now got this money at the expense of Richard Herring. He was one of my comedy heroes when I was a teenager. Now we're both reduced to begging for money online. If you would like to support the show as well, please do visit modernman.co.uk and click Beer Money. Thank you. On today's show, you'll learn which song to listen to get you a job. You will learn how to get a donut into your mouth as quickly as possible. And you'll learn what you could do with an earthworm, but almost definitely shouldn't. Let's go. on this week's Modern Man.
It's amazing what lengths they go to just get any old story. They're literally selling shame. Look at this, isn't it shameful?
What's it like becoming a presenter of one of the world's biggest TV shows?
And you go round sniffing each T-shirt and then writing down what you think of that scent on a notepad.
And Alex Fox sweats the small stuff over a question of sex. But first, it is your essential rundown on what is happening right bloody now. It's the Zeitgeist with Ollie Peart. Hello, Ollie.
Hi, Ollie. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. You know the answer to that. I smell a bit. We just discussed it off mic. Don't want to talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
What's been happening this week?
Tetris.
Tetris?
The movie.
No.
Yes. Ars Technica. Did you say ars? Ars. Anyway, they have reported that a studio has secured $80 million to fund a live-action version of Tetris as a film. A live-action Tetris film.
Yeah, it's not as ridiculous, though, as I get that you're suggesting.
I'm disappointed in your reaction.
No, obviously it's completely fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, you used to say, no, it's not that ridiculous.
No.
It's fucking stupid.
Of course it's stupid. Okay, so let me explain the two reactions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as ridiculous as you might expect
right.
from a branding, if I was a Hollywood producer perspective. You'd think, yeah, that's a big brand. We can sell all around the world. People know what it is. People are schmucks. They'll go and see it. From a viewer's perspective... From a consumer's perspective, do I want to spend my life watching Tetris the movie? Hell no.
But why invest? Because to me it makes no logical sense to invest.
That's the logical sense. We are talking about it. People will talk about it. They'll say, can you believe they've made a Tetris movie?
That no one will see.
Yeah, but no, but people will. It's like they made, what's that shit board game with the Rihanna did? Battleship. They made a film of that.
No.
They did. I think they've made a Monopoly movie. And, of course, the Lego movie. Now, that sounded pony, but was actually quite good.
Yeah, but they're slightly different, though, aren't they?
I don't think they are. Tetris
has no fucking narrative at all. With Lego, you know, you can create a character out of the little yellow man.
Yeah.
But try and create a character out of some shapes. Oh, look, it's Mr. L and Mr. T and Mr. I've just done it. I've written the film.
$16 million.
Oh, take everything back.
What are your other trends for the week, Ollie Peart?
The night bar.
Right.
I'll set the scene. You're sat on the sofa.
Mm-hmm.
You've been chilling out, watching a bit of TV.
Yeah.
It's getting on a
bit. Whinging about the quality of modern day screenwriting.
Yeah, of course. Naturally. Yeah. I mean, that's what I spend most of my life doing.
Yeah.
And then clock strikes 10, half
mm-hmm.
10.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Introducing the Night Bar. This is some food that has been developed by a company called Night Food.
Oh.
Have created a snack bar designed to cater for late night cravings.
But this is like when they try. Have you seen that advert for the Weetabix drink?
That's
as ridiculous as that.
Don't even start me on that, right? That Weetabix drink.
Yeah.
My future brother-in-law works for Weetabix.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. And I didn't know this, but they are Weetabix. It's not like Nestle own Weetabix. They are Weetabix. I didn't know this. Did you know that?
Everyone in that company loves to take wheat and crush it into small sizes.
Yeah, exactly. I went into my co-op and I thought, well, I'll buy that drink, bit of support.
My brother-in-law.
Yeah.
They may be an independent company, Ollie. They're not exactly struggling.
Well, just whatever. It wasn't even in the fridge. It was out.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Who wants to drink warm milk with Weetabix mashed in or whatever it is? I didn't even know what it was. Anyway... We're digressing away from the night bar.
Yeah. But the point is, we're not digressing because breakfast bars are stupid. Bars that you only eat at nighttime are stupid. The idea of trying to get everyone to eat 4 or 5 meals a day rather than the things that have, for good reason, become traditional, 3 meals a day when you're actually hungry, they're all stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, we are in the age of the food fad, right? I mean, the number of food fads that my other half keeps trying to make us do, like juicing is the top one. Like juicing.
So yeah, but every her ones are healthy, Ollie. You know, you were complaining the other week that she wants to feed you kale. That's good for you.
Yeah.
You surely must realise that a night bar, whatever you're about to tell me is in it, is definitely not good for you. It's going to be processed crap.
Well, yeah, they have like cookie dough and chocolate,
which
is actually quite tasty. But you don't want to eat it that time of night. But their argument is that it's a healthy alternative than actually reaching for cookies.
I suppose it's a healthier alternative, arguably, although kebabs can be quite healthy, can't they? Just barbecue meat and salad. But it's a healthier alternative than going to your local chippy.
Sorry, what? Did you say kebabs can be healthy?
I said can be quite. I was quite careful.
Yeah, but they're not, are they?
No, because people smother them in garlic mayonnaise, wrap them in bread and deep fry the chips. But I'm just saying if you had a traditional piece of barbecue meat and some salad as your dinner at 11 p.m., that wouldn't be terrible, would it?
No. But there is another food trend as well. Just tie this on quickly. That's sweeping the US.
Is it?
And that is buy it in the can, ready to drink, cold coffee. So they're seeing sales surge of cold coffee.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a replacement for having Coca-Cola. That's the suggestion.
People don't want to queue for their hot coffee. Because that's what we're seeing in the apps. If you see Dunkin' Donuts now have an app in the US where there are quite a lot of Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
Where you can check your app to say you want a donut and a coffee. You want it as quickly as possible. It'll tell you which one to go to using Google Maps. In other words, it's like on a plane where they say the nearest exit might be behind you.
What's the fastest way I can get a fucking donut?
That's the fastest way you can get a donut. That's it. And it might be walk 200 metres rather than 50 because there's no queue.
Well, I suppose that's what all of these things are about, isn't it?
So it's people who want a coffee quickly. You can have a cold one at the
coffee
fridge at
quickly.
Home.
I want a really quick midnight snack.
I want a Weetabix drink. I want to die when I'm 50.
Is that a statement?
Well, no. I'm saying that's what the consumer perhaps is saying.
Eat healthily, everyone.
What else have we got going on this week, Ollie?
Fitness.
Okay, yeah, links to our previous story, I guess.
Bang.fit.
Okay, this sounds like something Alex would talk about.
Well, yeah, possibly. You think I've got a bit of a fixation with Pornhub, don't you?
Yes.
But they have released a new game online. Like,
listeners don't even know.
Laughing. No, listen.
No, the reason I'm laughing, the listeners don't even know that almost every week you suggest a story that's come from Pornhub usually cut it out.
It's a game, right? Uh-huh. And it syncs the game on your computer with your iPhone, right?
Yeah.
You strap your... I'm going to demonstrate this now.
Okay.
You strap your iPhone here.
Yeah, he's holding it in front of his tummy.
Isn't it? Yeah, exactly. And then on the screen, it gives you like sort of different things to do and you have to keep in time with it. And as you thrust...
Right.
You score points.
I see. So it uses... So just to be clear, you take your mobile phone, you place it against your stomach and by accessing the gyroscope and the accelerometer into your phone software, Pornhub are able to determine the level of fitness you are attaining by your pelvic thrusts.
Yeah, and then you follow it on screen, and then you score loads of points and stuff.
It's not a sex game, Ollie. It's a wank game. This is something you're playing by yourself, isn't it?
No, you can play one player, two player, and their three player they call player.
Nice.
Because I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the thing that they're really pushing is that they want you to share it on Facebook and stuff with your mates so you can compete.
Yeah.
So you can still say, oh, look how many points I scored.
Well, you've just shared it with thousands of people, Ollie.
Well, I haven't
proud.
Done it. So because BangFit is competitive, you can play it against other people. I thought that I would look into other unusual competitive games.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Chess boxing.
I know from Answer Me This that's a real sport.
No! Really?
Sorry, yeah.
Have you seen
ridiculous.
Any of it?
I did once see a YouTube video and it's ridiculous.
I want to go and watch a match of that. I think it'll be quite good.
So you play a round of chess against an opponent and then in between you stand up and whack each other.
Either a knockout or a checkmate wins.
Yeah.
Either or can win the game, which is just brilliant. Intellectual and violent.
Yes.
Ferret legging. I would say, guess what it is first, as in what I've maybe made up or whatever's
you're
real.
You're giving me the hint there that it's probably not real.
No.
No.
Ferret legging
yeah.
is an actual game.
Is it?
Where you stick a ferret
down. Are we still doing
your...
Call My Bluff? I don't know.
No, it's absolutely true.
Right, okay.
You stick a ferret down your trousers and the person who keeps it down there the longest wins.
Yeah.
Do you want one more?
Yeah, well, this will be the fake one then.
Turd sculpting. No, wait. A Japanese game where participants' poos are judged on their artistic qualities.
The fact that you've had to justify that with a proper description, whereas the others you just wanked your way through, I think that's obviously the one you've made up. Yeah.
Yeah,
I've got you down.
Well, yeah, but it's.
I like the Japanese touch because that made it almost real, didn't it?
It's believable.
It's the kind
it?
Of thing they do.
It's so believable.
Yeah.
If that sport doesn't exist, because it could do,
I
might have just made it up and it exists. I invent stuff that already exists all the time.
Yeah,
I do that all the time. I don't know if you do that, but I do it all the time.
No, what you're doing there is you're saying you're ignorant of things that exist.
No,
and then people point that out to you.
I once invented written music. I'm not even joking, right? I drum. No, hear me out. I don't want this to drag out. Listen, hear me out. I was drumming, and I thought, what you could do is you get your pen, and then you place a dot, and as your hand moves, which identifies the time difference between each of the dots, and each of the dots is a different note. And then after about 10 minutes of doing this, I figured out that I'd actually invented written music.
Wow.
That's already been invented.
You're born out of your own time, aren't
you? Yeah, I'm just a genius.
Until next week, Ollie Pitt, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ollie.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, Rory Reed is the editor-in-chief of Recombu Cars. So you might have watched him online reviewing motor cars in a series of videos. But let's be honest, you probably haven't. You probably hadn't heard of Rory until he was announced as one of the seven new presenters of Top Gear, the BBC's massively popular motoring show that is relaunching this Sunday, having lost its trio of presenters following Jeremy Clarkson's infamous fracas with the producer. So, who is Rory? Well, he's been a tech journalist and a podcaster indeed. He's basically the only one of the new presenting lineup that isn't a squillionaire. He's the first black presenter of Top Gear, and also he'll be hosting his own BBC Three spin-off, Extra Gear, and it's going to air on BBC America in the States. In other words, he is about to be, this guy I know, is about to be massively famous. How did that happen? I went to his studio at Recombu to find out.
Somebody texted me and said, Chris Evans is looking for presenters for the new series of Top Gear, and he wants people to submit a 30-second audition tape. And they said, you're going to do it. I'm like, I'm on it right now. And I literally wrote my 30-second audition, jumped in this room, and started to record my audition. I did one version of it. And in that version, it kept going over 30 seconds. It was 32, then it was 31, then it was 30.5. And I didn't want any rules broken that would omit me from the process. Like, if they had an automatic filter that said, your audition is 30.19 seconds, we're not going to look at it. So I was determined to get it absolutely right. And in the end, I got it down to 30. And then I showed it to my partner and she said, you're wearing a hoodie and a t-shirt. That doesn't look very professional. Record another one, but wear a shirt. And I'm like, okay, all right, let me do that. So I put on a black shirt, re-recorded it. I must have did like 11 versions with this shirt. And then she went, yeah, that's the one. But I didn't like it. So in the end, I went, screw it. I'm going to submit the very first take that I did.
Did you?
Yeah. So the very first version I did in the hoodie and just sent it out there. And 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, they called me up and said, yeah, this is whoever from Top Gear. Where are
whoever.
You right now?
Look at you. You've already forgotten all the little people.
No, I know the guy's name. I just don't want to get him in trouble. Yeah. And he said, where are you right now? And I told him I was in like Hammersmith or something. And my heart's like pounding. He's like, okay, cool. Can you talk? I was like, yeah. He's like, great, great. What's your favorite food? And I'm like, steak, I guess. I'm thinking, should I have said steak? No, because Clarkson got fired over the whole steak situation. And he's like, what's your favorite sweets? You know, and all these weird questions. Like, yeah. And I'm like, where's he going with this? But he's obviously building a kind of profile of as to what kind of person I am.
They're really digging deep then.
Yeah. And then in the end, he said, look, we like your tape. We'd like to bring you in for a screen test. So what we're going to do is we're going to send you half a script on Friday. And on the Monday, you come in and perform that half. But with the second half, you have to write yourself.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Was it a car review?
Yeah, I had to do a car review on the track while driving a car. Uh-huh. And I had to do a studio segment talking about a car to the camera in the actual Top Gear studio.
I'm glad they tested the talking and driving at the same time thing. That's important.
Quite crucial. Yeah. Quite crucial. It turns out I was listening to Eminem Lose Yourself the whole weekend, like psyching myself up. Like, you've got one shot to do this. Don't blow it. And I'm pacing around the house.
It's safe to say James May never did that.
Yeah, I doubt that. There's a guy called Tom Ford who was the script editor before he left to do something else. And he was telling me, look, they're going to be like good cop, bad cop. You know, they're going to make it hard for you. But just trust in yourself. Just do what you have to do. Then we actually had to go into the studio and do the segment. And I nailed that studio segment in one take. Mm-hmm. And the cameramen were like, holy cow, he just did it in one take. Like, no one else had done it in one take of the whole thousands upon thousands of people.
It's all your live radio experience with Ollie Mann, you see.
Yeah, exactly.
Comes
yeah.
into play. Are you listening,
well?
TV commissioners?
You trained me well, Ollie. You trained me well. And then I had to run out onto the track and jump behind the wheel of a Mercedes, a C63 Estate or an E63 Estate, one of them. Big, powerful car. And I had to deliver a script as well while driving. And it was something that Tom Ford had told me, stuck in my head. He said, when you go out there, A, enjoy it, but B, like, drive it like you mean it. Because some people are out there and they're driving really slowly and all that stuff. And he said, that's okay. If, you know, if you want to drive it slowly and you know, take it safe, that's okay. But, you know, I took that to mean if you're not, like, absolutely hooning it out yeah. there, it will be noticed.
Yeah.
So I was, like, I was having a ball. I was, like, you know, had the back end of the car sliding out, you know, like, proper having fun with it while delivering the lines.
See, again, I imagine feeling nervous about that, because it's one thing to say, right, it's a track day, go for it. It's yeah. another thing to say, well, here's a car that belongs to, I guess, either Mercedes or the BBC,
yeah.
But whichever, not you, on yeah. loan to you. I mean, your first ever drive under pressure, you're probably thinking, I just really don't want to crash this thing.
Yeah, yeah, there was that. There were two cameras in the car, two cameras pointed at me. There were three cameramen trackside. So every corner I went past, they're watching you drive and how you drive and whether you're executing the moves correctly. And they're analysing your every word, your every inflection, every movement in the car. So it's everything's analyzed afterwards. I had 20 minutes to do my entire thing. I finished it in five.
You were going fast.
15 minutes just to play around and have fun. And I radioed in saying, can I keep going? Because I'm done, but can I keep going? And they were like, I didn't hear their response. So I was like, I'll take that as a yes. So I just kept pissing about on the track, basically, and kind of sort of narrating what was going on. And I was thinking maybe if they were watching this and thinking, if Rory ends up in a foreign country somewhere having to describe his adventures, then how would he tell his story? And I was doing that in the car as well.
Okay, so, you know, retrospectively, obviously, you look back at that first screen test and you're like, yeah, nailed it. At the time, how did you feel when you were done?
Like I'd nailed it. But that's not what happened. They emailed me and said, yeah, you were great, you did nail it, and you're through to the final, I don't know, seven or whatever. Mm. They said, yeah, we'll be in touch and let you know.
Yeah.
And then they were in touch about 2 weeks later by email, and they said, sorry, we won't be taking you any further. You haven't got through. Mm-hmm. And then my heart sank at that moment.
But did you think at that point, well, fair enough. There must be someone better than
absolutely
me?
Absolutely not.
No, this is an injustice.
No, yeah, completely.
I'm the right man and they made a mistake.
I felt wronged. So what I did...
What rap song were you listening to at that point?
well, this is the thing. I went and made my own rap song. This is
At
that point.
You're kidding.
I decided for a couple of reasons. One, to show them that they'd made a mistake. And two, to prove to myself that I still had what it took. I went away and I wrote a rap about a Rolls Royce. And and this video is out on YouTube. You can watch it. It's the Rolls Royce Ghost rap review, basically. And it's just me rapping about the car from a very kind of emotional standpoint. Beautiful, introspective music, sexy visuals, and me just sort of like, almost like a love song to the car.
The cabin is floor to ceiling pimping. The ceiling's pimped in optical fibers, a fiber optic environment designed with lights that ignite to mimic the sky at night. There's Orion's knife, three stars in his waistband. This car's not for a waste, man. Yeah, it's materialistic, especially when you consider the materials in this. About 16 cows worth of white leather, straight from Fendi himself. That fashion house done did fashion proud when they splashed it round.
So emailed it to them and said, when you have a chance, maybe watch this. The next day, they called me and said, we'd like to offer you the job.
You're kidding.
Yeah, seriously. So that was me saying, look, you've got it wrong, and I'm going to prove to you that you got it wrong. And if you don't, and even if you don't believe me, I'm going to prove to myself that you got it wrong so I can move forward. It was like a moment. It was meant to be a moment of closure, that particular video, but it ended up possibly sealing my place in the show.
Yeah. Were there always going to be seven presenters? It's a lot. Maybe they just decided to squeeze you in.
Maybe they did. There was no finite number of people that they were aiming for. It might have been Chris Evans and one other person. It might have been Chris and two, Chris and three, Chris and four, whatever. Maybe they had chosen their final lineup and said, this guy can bring something to the table.
Did your partner know? Did your children know?
Yeah, my partner knew. My children are too young to know what's going on, really. The thing is, I didn't really know, other than the verbal agreement,
yeah.
The verbal offer. You know, the woman that I was dealing with, Lisa Clark, she left. She left the BBC.
Yes.
She was my main contact. So when she left, and the first I heard about that was in the newspaper, I'm like, what's going to happen to me?
And every decision is poured over by the tabloids, isn't it? That was presented as her falling out with Chris Evans.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, what's going to happen next? Because the person championing me is not here anymore. So am I? Does this mean I'm not going to be part of it? But no, it was obviously a deeper decision than that, and I ended up being part of the team.
I know that your mates were excited and your family were excited because I'm a friend of yours on Facebook, so I know that. Mm. What about the public reaction? Because it's such a huge thing. What happened after it was announced?
The first thing that happened was the newspapers. So I was watching the websites of various newspapers, and they were writing stories, some negative. There's a particular photograph of me holding two shotguns with a cigarette in my mouth, which they tried to imply was marijuana, and tried to paint me as a gun-toting, I don't know, lunatic, who knows. But yeah, there was some negative spin on that photo.
Why is there a photo of you posing with two Uzis? Why does that
exist? Because I'm a gun-toting lunatic. No, it's because I went on a team-building day. It was the end of the year. We wanted to have some fun, let off some steam. And we were clay pigeon shooting, and everyone was taking pictures with the rifles. Me being me, I wanted two rifles, and someone was smoking a cigarette. So I was like, yeah, let me get that cigarette, and just took a picture. Right. It's a public photo. It was my profile picture.
It's a playful, I'm a wannabe gangster joke.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
And, but presumably the context that these newspaper websites were using it in was more like, look who they've chosen to be newly presented.
Yeah,
scandalous.
Exactly. And what was interesting was on their Facebook pages, the comments under that by the public, one of them was like, what an idiot. Did he think no one would find out? I'm like, find out what? Like, yeah. It's a public picture I took deliberately as a laugh. Yeah. I'm not actually robbing a bank. The day after that, all the newspapers ran with those stories. I was front page of one or two newspapers, and pretty much inside all of them in some capacity. And that was really hard to wrap my head around, because here I am coming from obscurity. You know, I've got fans on YouTube, you know, tens of thousands, but it's such a small number in YouTube land. Some people have millions upon millions, but being thrust into a place where people are writing about you and casting you as some particular character that you're not, it was quite uncomfortable. What made it more uncomfortable was that I had to actually do my first film that day. So the day after they announced it, I had to fly out to Scotland to do my first VT for the show. So I had to sort of block everything out. I was conscious of the newspapers knocking on family members' doors.
Do they do that? What were they looking for?
Who knows? Anything was what they said. Anything.
Why didn't they knock on my door? I'd have happily sold a story about you. Worked with you for 3 years.
There you go. They went up to my partner's parents' house. They live in the northeast, Northumberland. They're like, have you got anything on Rory? Anything at all? And they're like, no, like, piss off. And they're like, look, you can do it anonymously. Like, give us something anonymously and we'll pay you. And it's like, you know, it's amazing what lengths they go to just get any old story. They're literally selling shame. They're like, look at this, isn't it shameful? And that's kind of what they lead with.
And from that point of view, have you been back retrospectively through old tweets, through old YouTube videos that you posted up and thought, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with this, but I better take it down because this is going to be a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I took down a lot of pictures of my kids off Instagram.
Yeah.
Tweets, not so much. Primarily, I've kind of taken down off Facebook, locked down a few of the settings to make sure that people who I'm not that familiar with, but I'm friends with, can't see certain things.
Yeah.
There's still plenty more of that to do because I'm getting so many friend requests now. It's ridiculous. I had like 300 friend requests in the space of a week afterwards from people who vaguely knew me or knew me through a friend or whatever. And I'm like, you didn't care before.
Yeah. This is it. So you get people coming back out the woodwork. You're like, hey, remember me from 20 years ago?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they're all still pending. Most of them are pending until I decide who is genuine and who's not genuine. There is a friend of mine. She knows somebody at the tabloids. She knows people at the tabloids. The tabloids are texting her, begging for dirt as well. There's a phenomenon where you know you have information and someone wants information, but you want to show that you have this information that they want, this power, and you end up kind of drip feeding that power, that information, to show that, you know, you're in the know somehow. So what ended up happening was she ended up selling a story to the papers, a nonsense story about me loving kittens, not guns. And within that story is like, oh, he's a family man. He's not a gun-toting rude boy or any of this. But that disappointed me as well, because I'd said to her specifically, don't talk to the papers at all. But she ended up going to them and saying, you know, I'm not going to tell you anything, but he's, you know, he's like this or he's like that. And that ended up being in the Mirror. You know, that was a disappointing moment for me. And I'm trying to come to terms with that. And I'm wondering how many other people who know me and have been approached have the intention not to share their stories, but end up doing so out of a oh, look at me, I'm in a position of power. Yeah, I know Rory, I can tell you stuff, but I won't. Except this thing.
Well, the difficulty, of course, is that, you know, tabloid journalists, despite their many faults, are ordinary people too. They go for drinks with people, and over a pint, someone says, oh, yeah, I worked with Rory Reid years ago. Yeah. He said this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All that stuff is now fair game as a story, isn't
it? Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, yeah, there'll be more of that. There will be more of that. Yeah.
And how do you prepare yourself for that?
You don't. You know, I haven't done anything really stupid in my life. But like anyone, you live a normal life, you end up doing things in certain situations where you think back and you think that can be twisted in a particular way. I'll tell you, there's a very recent story. I was on a car launch and I ended up in a hotel room with one of the car manufacturer representatives and three other journalists. We're all just listening to music and having a drink in this person's room. And I lay back on the bed for a minute and I closed my eyes for a second and someone had taken a picture of me and then showed me the picture and it looked like I'd passed out on this bed.
Mm.
And I immediately thought, oh my, that could end up in a newspaper someday. Mm. Like Rory Reid passed out on a bed at 4 a.m. or whatever. And so now I have to kind of steel myself for past stories which might be twisted in a particular way and future stories that might be twisted in a particular way. So I have to carry myself in a very different way now, even around people that I trust. I can't do certain things. I've always got to be like on my game about everything, which is disappointing, but you know, it's the nature of the beast.
And socially, you were talking about how, you know, when you're out, even with people you know, you've got to try and watch yourself and what you're saying. What are the words in your head keeping you in check?
Don't get naked. It's mostly don't get drunk. I've stopped drinking. I've stopped drinking for the most part for a couple of reasons. One is I work almost constantly. And if there's any nugget of a hangover in my system, I don't think I'm performing at 100% and I don't feel 100%.
You probably don't want to be driving at 140 miles an hour.
There you go. That too. And also I want to enjoy it. I don't want to be thinking, oh God, I feel shit. You know, so drinking, that had to go. And within that, you end up not finding yourself in certain situations.
And don't ever do eeny, meeny, miny, mo and be filmed doing it.
That's a good tip as well. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I've learned from that.
Okay, so you're flying all over the world now, suddenly filming for Top Gear. What's that like? What's it like being part of one of the biggest TV shows in the world?
It's surreal, very surreal. You know, meeting people on the street. So I'll be in a car. In front of me, there'll be a camera crew.
When you say a car, you're in like a Tesla or a Ferrari, right?
I'm in something.
You're not in a Mondeo.
Nice. Yeah, I'm in something spectacular.
I'm just trying to paint a picture with words here.
But on top of that, you've got like a team of people who are like, you know, you are the center of attention for them. They're pointing cameras at you. They're talking in walkie-talkies at you. You know, you become this kind of beacon for people. And all around you, people notice that. And they pull out their camera phones and start taking pictures and pointing and smiling. And they recognize you too, because within that context, you are the guy off Top Gear. Yeah.
Yeah, you know that because the show hasn't aired yet, probably if you just walked down that same street, they wouldn't look twice at you.
They wouldn't care. Yeah, they wouldn't care.
But no, in the future, they will. In the future, you know, they'll know who you are as the guy off Top Gear all the time.
That's really unsettling. It's like having gone for a doctor's appointment to have some sort of test for a disease and you're waiting for the doctor to come back with the results. It's that exact feeling. It's like, have I got some sort of weird tropical illness that's going to kill me? That's the exact feeling I have right now. It's really weird, really unsettling. And at the same time, I'm having to kind of work through this feeling, get on with my normal life, but also like working really, really fucking hard, like getting up at 4 a.m., finishing after midnight, sleeping for a couple hours and then going back at it with this anticipation on top of it. It's a very, very surreal feeling.
Have you been promised a steak at any point, and did the runner deliver it to you?
No, I haven't been promised a steak. I told them when I joined that I liked Haribo, and usually when I go in, there's packs of Haribo.
Good.
They're so nice. They're really good.
You've learned
the lesson. But the dinner arrangements can be atrocious. When we're at the race at the Top Gear test track, the catering's great. When we're on the road, we eat when we can, basically, because the important thing is to get the footage. So we're not going to book a restaurant. We're on the road. We're driving around, and we'll eat when we can. The last meal I had in New York when we were shooting there's a Tesla we were shooting over there. They went off and got Chinese. We were eating lukewarm chow mein in a gutter, like standing standing between two cars, eating like really crappy chow mein. And we had 20 minutes to eat before we had to get back on the road because it's like after midnight, and we needed the shots.
So you have some sympathy for a curly haired presenter who wants his steak.
I understand his predicament. You know, he wanted food, but the food's not always there. and not always great. Some of the cameramen, when they're out filming on location, they might not make it back to the hotel in time for the kitchen to be open. So sometimes they'll pre-order a bunch of pizza, have it delivered to the hotel. By the time they get there, it's like 2 hours later and it's freezing cold. But what else are you going to do? Like, not make the film. The film is the most important thing, and it will get made, and it will get made to a high quality. And if anything gets in the way, even food, then, you know, things will suffer. So that can't happen.
Well, folks, we are only a few short steps away from our weekly trip down the foxhole. Alex Fox will be here next. But first, a word from our sponsors. Once again, big thanks to baldheadliberationfront.com. It's your one-stop shop for all your product needs. Ben Smalley is with me again, the founder of the website. Ben, you are beautifully bald.
Thanks, Ollie.
So how old were you when you decided, right, I'm just going to shave it all off. I'm just going to accept the fact this ain't coming back.
Tried to cling on to it for about 2 or 3 years, but I think I was 21 by the point where I just thought, you know, I remember the time going into the barbers and thinking, you know, this is probably the last time I'm going to be able to get a proper haircut done in a style. It's just going to be shorter and shorter from here on in. Basically, getting rid of what little hair I had left really was a major boost to the confidence, because you're not trying to hide it anymore. You're not avoiding going swimming, diving in, you know, if you're on holiday, diving in the swimming pool in front of everybody because you're going to come back out and it's going to be blatantly obvious that you've got a big hole in your hair. It's liberating, and that's partly where the name came from.
And so what are the kinds of products that you sell? Is it a case of moisturiser, sun oils?
All of the above. So we've got razors out there specialised for people who, like me, love the gadgets and want something a bit different. We've got the old-style barber's razor that we've got imported from a little homegrown manufacturer over in the States called Sir Hair. They also make a range of different shaving oils, so different smells. You know, there's T-shirts, there's mugs. There's all sorts coming out, and they'll be being launched in the next week or so.
And Ben, if people want to check out your website once again, what's the address?
It's baldheadliberationfront.com.
Thanks. Right, let's get sexy, let's get sweaty, let's get filthy, let's get entirely consensual with the foxhole. Alex Fox is here. Hello, Alex.
Welcome within my beautiful folds.
And the listeners at home.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they were already secreted within my folds as it stood.
There's room for thousands.
Oh, yes.
I understand that you went to bed at 5:30 in the morning on Sunday. Why was that?
Some friends of mine, including the lovely Jem Kearney, were holding an event called The Sleepover. And unfortunately, one of the comedians they'd booked pulled out at the last minute, not in a contraceptive sense. Mm-hmm. And so they phoned me up. I was just on my way back from a wedding and said, Alex, can you possibly come and do a very last minute sex workshop? And so I found myself chatting to 25 very inebriated women in this massive royal suite of the hotel about how to use earthworms for sexual pleasure.
Earthworms?
I did this impromptu Q&A about my whole career, and someone asked me what's the weirdest fetish that I've ever heard of. Right. Back when I worked at Bizarre magazine, I used to get regular letters and photographs from a gentleman who was really into using things from his garden and things from the natural world to pleasure himself with. Mm-hmm. And he discovered that he could wash the soil off earthworms that he'd dug up in his backyard, put them in the freezer so they'd set rigid, insert them into his pee hole,
no,
like post them down his pee pipe, and then as the warmth of his body brought them up out of their chilled state, the earthworms would come back to consciousness and
would
wriggle
they?
Around.
I thought you were going to say they were dead.
No. Well, according to his letters,
right,
they would go into some kind of hibernation state in his freezer and then be reawoken by the body heat of his penis.
I'm not sure that's legal.
Would it count
it sounds like animal cruelty to me.
Yeah, yeah. It might. The RSPCA could probably consult on this
say.
One.
Let's move on.
Okay.
We've had this question from a man who's chosen to remain anonymous. He says, I'm a gay man in his early 20s, and I've realised over the past few years that I am somewhat aroused by the smell of sweat. Is this normal? I'm not sure how I feel about it. My partner would definitely not be into it if I raised it with him. How common is this? Sweat fetish.
It's perfectly normal and, in fact, really common to be attracted to the smell of sweat. Sweat contains chemical compounds known as pheromones, which are designed specifically to attract one member of an animal species to another. Mm. In fact, it is posited that you will be attracted to the pheromone smell of somebody whose immune system is complementary to yours, so that were you to mate and have children, they would have a more comprehensive immune system and thus be more resistant to disease.
Okay, so why doesn't Giorgio Armani aftershave smell of BO?
You can get pheromone perfumes. You can get colognes that smell of armpit.
Yeah, but I think it's fair to say they're less popular, aren't they, than perhaps the more mainstream brands.
Elements of perfumes are argued to potentially echo those natural bodily odours that we do produce. It's just that when those particular notes are picked out and combined in other scents, they smell differently to us, ostensibly. There was a study actually run by the University of California that showed the presence of a compound called, now I'm going to have to be careful on how I pronounce this, androstadienones. Androstadienones are these chemical compounds that behave like pheromones, which have been found present in sweat, and they actually incite a measurable physical reaction in the person who's doing the smelling. They speed up their pulse rate, they raise their blood pressure, they make their heartbeat faster, and they actually prompt people when they're sniffed to produce more of the stress hormone cortisol. So in essence, they make people excited. My point is, there is a chemical reason why our anonymous gentleman feels excited by the smell of sweat. And it's nothing to be ashamed of, although I can understand why raising that with your partner can be a little bit challenging. I'm interested in the fact that he says his partner definitely wouldn't be into it.
Well, that seems to suggest to me that what he wants to do is actually stick his nose right up his partner's something, and that would be a suggestion that might be off-putting to the man who is sweating.
When you say up his partner's something,
well, I don't
what
know.
Do you
I
mean?
Don't, I don't
it
know.
Sounds a lot like you're suggesting up his partner's bum,
yeah,
which
could
to
be.
Me suggests that you're inferring that you have a sweaty arse, Ollie.
How did we get onto my sweaty bumhole? I'm just saying, I could have said armpit, but then as I was saying, I thought, well, no, could be pubis, could be bumhole. The point is, he doesn't want to say to his partner, let me sniff your whatever. That's what he finds awkward.
Well, there are ways that he could suggest this to his partner that are a little bit more perhaps in his fella's comfort zone. For example, saying, "Oh, I love the way your t-shirt smells when you've slept in it." I've definitely texted partners in the past when they've been away from me and gone, "Oh, I'm wearing your t-shirt in bed because it's comforting and it smells of you." And they haven't gone, "Ooh, you total minger, it reeks of my armpits."
Yes, but if
or
you said
my
to
bum
them,
hole.
Yes, but if you said to them, "Oh, I want you to come home so I can give you a blowjob, and I definitely don't want you to have a shower first," that would feel weird then, wouldn't it? It's a different kind of sweat, isn't it? What you're talking about is a residual sweat that maybe isn't directly out the armpit, but is a pheromone that comes off your body generally. When you say specifically, "I like dirty sweat," you can see why someone feels awkward admitting to that.
There's plenty of people who still are very open about the fact that really dirty, filthy sweat in copious bucketfuls turns them on.
And as ever, what I'm learning from the Foxhole week on week is that if you think you're doing something quite niche, actually, it turns out there are thousands of people online who will share this with you. Can you go to a group where you all sniff each other or something?
Yes, you can.
Of
there
course
are actually
you can.
Pheromone dating parties.
Yep.
You heard about this?
No.
They require you to wear a plain t-shirt, I think for 3 days. I think they might ask you to sleep in it, actually. Then you bring it with you to this pheromone dating party in a bag. They're all just labelled with numbers, and you go round sniffing each T-shirt and then writing down what you think of that scent on a notepad. Mm. At the end, the ones that you thought smelled attractive to you, they will reveal who the person behind that particular odour was, and you get to go on a date with them.
I can see why the TV format never worked out. Something you really need to be in the room to experience, isn't it?
Well, wait for Smell-O-Vision. It might happen.
I'm sure this chap is. Maybe that is the solution to his problem. If you have a similar question you would like to run past our love guru, Alex Fox, she's here every week, like a bad smell. Alex, what do people need to do?
Head over to our website, which is modernman, spelt MANN.co.uk, and click on feedback to send me a question.
Smell you later. Well, that's nearly it for this week. Before this week's song, I just need to formally announce that the Modern Man now has a Belgian ambassador. It is Seidelman. If you would like to become an international ambassador for the show, all you need to do is go to iTunes in your home country and post us a review. We are at itunes.com/MAMM. Seidelman, thank you for your 5-star review, and you have my reassurance you remain Belgian ambassador, even in the case of Brexit. Music now, our theme is by Django Django from their debut album. And, well, somewhere in an alternate reality, Ollie Peart may have devised our musical notation system, but could it have been used to create something as beautiful as this? It's by Glass Animals. It's called Life Itself. Go and buy it. I'm Ollie Mann, the producer, Matt Hill, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Daddy was done.